Right now, we welcome back to The Shilling Show David Murata, president of Murata Wealth Management, online at muratahonmoney.com. And today, a great gift to you, or it could be a gift if you follow some of the things we're going to tell you about today, end of the year tax savings ideas. David, welcome back to The Shilling Show, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I started out by, I prefaced this whole thing by saying there seems to be, maybe it's just around us, an increasing number of people who just don't seem to be interested in lower taxes. In fact, they like it when other people, and sometimes even themselves, pay more taxes. I don't get it.
Well, it is certainly the case that everyone wants other people to pay taxes and not themselves, because we want to maximize our own interests. And a lot of people think that they can't reduce their taxes. We have many clients who say, yeah, you know, you're going to do a tax review, but you really can't save me anything on my taxes. They're so straightforward. You know, I just fill out the forms every April and I send my money in, mm-hmm. and I don't really do anything out of the ordinary. And so there's really no way of doing any kind of tax planning or tax reductions. And I'm here to say they're just wrong. Taxes are the most complex strategy game you could ever play. I used to play tournament chess, and in chess, there are rules that are just crazy. People think chess. How are the rules that are just crazy? Well, how come the knights get to hop over other pieces? Mm-hmm. How come you can only move one piece unless you can move two pieces when you castle? Mm-hmm. How come pawns can only go forward, and when they hit the end of the board, they can become any other piece on the table? How come when your pawn moves two squares and my pawn could have moved only one square, it could have taken it if it only moved one square, I get to move my pawn to a square your pawn isn't even there and take your pawn off the board? You know, that's a strange rule in chess called en passant. And the tax code is like that. The tax code has no morality to it. So when people say, well, all these, you know, laws are in the place to do social engineering and do good, that's not the way we view them. We view them as a set of laws like chess. And in chess, you have a goal. Your goal is to try to checkmate the other person. Well, in taxes, you have a goal, and that is to try to maximize your after-tax net worth. And so we play that game very well, and there's lots of things that ordinary people can do if they were just willing to learn the rules and play that game. And I, you know, I hold that separately from my politics. Mm-hmm. In my politics, I vote the bums out of office who want to make more complexity in the tax code. But the more complex they make it, the more opportunities there are to play the game.
So this is very interesting, and I'm so glad you brought this up, the game aspect of all of this, because it's bothered me for a long time. And I think both you and I are advocates of a flat tax. Perhaps I'm not going to speak for you, but I think we've had the conversation before.
Yeah, the best tax would be a flat value added tax.
So a consumption based flat tax.
Yeah, a consumption based tax.
Yeah. So I was thinking of this whole thing. If you want flat chess, you play checkers. So I mean, there are more straightforward ways to do this if you don't like the experience. But it is a game. And I think that's the key here, is that this is just a big game and people are gaming the system. And you're right. I mean, we should vote them all out, but they keep saying, well, we're going to simplify things, and then they just make it more complex.
You know, the beauty of a flat consumption tax is it's like playing tic-tac-toe on a one-by-one board. Mm-hmm. You just put your X in and that's mm-hmm. it. You're done.
Right.
Even checkers is fairly complex. but, you know, the tax code is more complex than Magic the Gathering. Mm-hmm. It changes its set of cards every single year. One set comes off, and the set that's now 4 years rolls off the board. But the tax code is constantly changing. There's sections of the tax code that apply to 10 or less people, entities, because they're written for special interests. And government has a vested interest in keeping it complex, because when it's complex, they can put things in for their constituents. And that way, y'all lobby them, and their lobbying has a self interest of getting reelected. That's true of Democrats. It's true of Republicans. It's true of Libertarians who choose to even run for office. Mm-hmm. If they're trying to get reelected, you want as complex a tax code as possible, and the people have to reject that. But the rubber bands pull the politics back into a complex tax code.
And that's the sad part of it, because it almost seems like there's no hope to ever get what you want or I want. I was somewhat hopeful, you know, looking at the last election, saying, hey, they're going to reform, they're going to go back and fix some of these problems with the tax code. And what came out on the other end, I'm not even sure if I'm going to benefit or not, but it was like we're just moving the deck chairs around, as you said.
It was an incredible disappointment that the Republicans had the opportunity to put whatever tax code they thought should be put in place and decided to just tweak things a little bit here and there.
Let's go to the phones here. We got a couple minutes left before the break, and David is on the line. And David, you're on with David Murata. Go right ahead.
Yes. Good day, guys. David, I'm sure the answer to this is yes, but I'm curious to know when you've ever had any conversations with federally elected officials about this. What sort of runaround diatribe have they given you, and do you ever hold any hope that common sense will come back to, you know, re-engineering the tax code? And I'll hang up and listen to your answer off the air. Thank you.
David, thank you.
Yeah, the few politicians that I know that are willing to speak to me honestly will tell me that 65% of their time and effort is spent being reelected. Mm-hmm. It's mostly calling people for campaign contributions, and they will do whatever those people tell them to do. Within reason, they'll do whatever those people tell them to do in terms of monkeying with the system. And there's a vested interest in lobbyists not having a simplified system, because you want a system that punishes your competitors and benefits you. And so that's where you get captured regulatory agencies. The short answer is, the more limits that you can put on the power of government, the less government corruption and influence you'll have. So no one lobbies someone who doesn't have power. You only lobby people who have power, and you only put in things to punish your competitors if that's what government can do. And most people just don't realize that about government. When I was young, I thought, why don't we just all get together and do good things? And that's what the impetus of government is, until you begin to realize that when you get a whole bunch of people together, their vested interests take over from what is in the best interest of society.
Is there any place in the world right now and that has actually put in a simplified system that we could look at that and say, look how it's working?
Yes, there have been places that have had simplified tax codes. There was first a flat tax in one of the Eastern European countries. Mm-hmm. Now I'm trying to remember what it was. It was number one in the freedom rankings for a while because of that. And he had simply, when the president had simply said, you know, when they came out from under the Soviet Union, he'd said, well, Milton Friedman says a flat tax is good, so let's try that.
Wow.
And they did for a long time, and that was a great boon to their economy, and it helped. Chile has a privatized social security system. There's a number of places that have flatter taxes than normal. Even Hong Kong has a fairly flat tax at 10%, and they're able to run their government with that.
If there was a United States state that came out and said, we're changing our tax structure and our education structure, that you could, the money follows the kid, and the taxes are going to be flat and consumption-based, would you move there? Because I would.
The problem is our federal government is our biggest taxes.
If they had a shelter from the federal government.
Yes, they had a shelter from the federal government and they had a flat tax, I'd probably move my business there.
Yeah, I'd be there too. All right, let's go to the break. David Murata, more after this. The Shilling Show rolls on here. It is a Tuesday edition of the program. David Murata is with us. End of the year tax savings ideas. And I do promise you we'll get there before the hour is up. But we do have a caller on the line and a line open for you at 977-1070 as we say hello to Greg. Hello, Greg.
Hey, how are you guys? You know, I've got a picture here in front of me of the Statue of Liberty with its back to us carrying a suitcase. I guess trying to leave the United States. But, in the beginning, you know, your common man could work and buy a piece of land and through his own labor and resources create an estate, establish a place, a point where he could either make a living on the farm or whatever small business it was. And unfortunately, you know, the local progressive movements in the county governments, you know, and this is in California, will eventually tax him out of his business and tax him off his land at the local level. But then you've got what you're talking about at a macro level where, you know, the big boys, especially the global elites, want centralized planning understand the rules of centralized planning, where they use in the United States, Washington, D.C., and in Europe, Brussels, to manage everything. And they use people like Hillary Clinton, who says she's one of the people in the social welfare state, when in fact we're all being used as pawns. And usury is committed against all of us, whether it's at the local level and trying to create our own business and our own livelihood on the land, or at the higher level of corporate America, who just, you know, everything's outsourced and rules are made such that only a few make it. And they do it in the guise of the Liberal Democratic Party in some cases. And I just like your comment on my opinion there. Thank you.
Greg, thank you.
Greg, it's hard to feel like you've got control of your life when you have entities that are above you that are set out to collect a lot in taxes and to put a lot of rules on. They have the problem in Europe of, you know, rules being set not even by the elected politicians, they're set by committees of the European Union. And they call that, you know, beyond democracy, because democracy can't even change that. The infrastructure is stuck so much at the European Union level that you can't change anything with an election. A lot of people in America feel like that we've got it's called the deep state, and that is the people who are in power in government, regardless of who's in the White House or who's in Congress, such that they're making decisions and you can't even get at it. I've heard a lot of representatives and senators talk on that to the point where, you know, even they can't get a straight answer about what the NSA is doing or how to change some of the regulatory agencies, because Congress, when they write a law, they basically delegate the power of filling in all the details to regulatory agencies. And again, the more power that you give to politicians and government workers, they have an incentive of keeping that power. And keeping that power often means working against even the elected officials who are trying to institute change. And that's why I lean libertarian. It's the less power that you give to government, the better. And trying to pull back regulations is harder than trying to put them in the first place. And the tax code is the same way. The tax code is very complex, and it favors those who are nimble and good at playing the game. I played tournament chess, and I was very good at it, and other people didn't stand as much of a chance on the chessboard if they were playing against someone good, because the rules favor those who understand the rules better and know how to use them. So that's one of the problems with the tax code is, if you're doing your own taxes or you don't have a really, really good tax planner, not just a tax preparer, but a tax planner, you're often not able to benefit from all of the different rules that you could benefit from.
Let's go now, David, to the topic of today's program directly, because we did promise people, and we could go on for 2 hours on this, but
we did.
End of the year tax savings ideas. And let's go, first of all, to the qualified charitable distributions for those over 70. What are those?
Yeah, so anyone who does any charitable giving this year should probably not be writing a check. If you're over 70, you are allowed to transfer funds directly out of your IRA in what's called a qualified charitable distribution. It will not add to your income, and therefore it will not increase your taxes. And the difficulty this year is they have doubled the standard deduction. So a lot of people's charitable giving will not exceed the standard deduction. So for a lot of people, if you write a check directly to a charity, you will get nothing off on your taxes because you're just taking the standard deduction this year, even if you itemized last year. Now, for people who give a lot or have huge mortgages, you might still itemize, but the married filing jointly standard deduction is $24,000. That's a lot of money, so it's hard to get over that. But you can still get a deduction if you're over 70 by giving up to $100,000. So anything up to $100,000 can be given directly from your IRA. You owe no taxes on it, and it does not increase your AGI, so it counts as being deducted anyway.
There's something called gift clumping, which I've never heard of before. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so pretend for a minute that you are charitably inclined, and maybe you give $12,000, but that's not over the $24,000 standard deduction. So the entire $12,000 is not tax deductible because you're going to take the standard deduction. Well, if you could just give 5 years all in 1 year, now all of a sudden you're giving $60,000. That's over the $24,000. Now you can take that off on your taxes. And you can give that and put it into a donor-advised fund. And now you've got your giving for 5 years. You can gradually hand that out to your charities. So 1 year, you'll get a $60,000 tax deduction. And all the other 4 years, you get a $24,000 standard deduction. And by clumping your gifts together 1 year, you can exceed and actually make them count for something.
You mentioned a donor-advised fund. For people who are not familiar with the term.
Yeah, a donor-advised fund, you get the deduction when you put it in your donor-advised fund. Officially, it's no longer yours. You will ultimately have to give it to charity. But Schwab or Fidelity have probably the two large, Vanguard have the three largest donor-advised funds. You tell them where to send it, almost like bill pay. You just say, send it to my church. Here's the address. Mm-hmm. And so long as the entity is a qualified 501c3. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Or a church or something like that, they will just transfer it off directly. And you can set it up to be automatically or anything else like that. And it's so simple. You can transfer your appreciated stock even to get a bigger deduction, transfer appreciated stock to your donor advised fund, and then gradually hand it out to the charities over the next 5 years.
So it sounds like these donor advised funds have great function. This is not a very narrow thing. It sounds like they're applicable in different areas.
Yeah, and it's a way of doing transfer your appreciated stock. And then with the donor advised fund, you can send checks as small as $50 mm-hmm. off to charity. So it's very easy to do. Most of our clients who give over maybe $3,000 a year have switched over to donor advised funds for that reason.
All right, let's go to the break. We'll come back on the other side and talk about one of my favorite subjects, which is health savings accounts. And unfortunately, thanks to Barack Obama, Tom Perriello, and the Democrats, I can no longer take advantage of it, but I'm hoping that will change someday soon. So we'll get into that on the other side as the Shilling Show continues with David Moronic.
Turn your lights down low.
All right, into the final segment of this hour with David Morata. We're talking about tax savings ideas before the end of the year. That means you have to start working right now because, my goodness, 2019 is almost upon us. One of our listeners called in and said, would you please define what over 70 means so people understand they don't have to wait to be 71? So is it 70 by what date?
Yeah, so it means the year you turn 70 and a half is the year you begin to have required minimum distributions, and that's also the year that you are allowed to do qualified charitable distributions as well.
Okay, so that's very helpful information. I'm glad we could clarify that. All right, so let's go on to health savings accounts, and this is so sad because I love my HSA. I still have a little bit of money kicking around in there from when I could put it in, but we had to leave the Obamacare system and go to MediShare, which I'm generally very happy with, except I can't donate money or I can't put in money to a health savings account.
Yeah, and again, if you have a health savings account, you should fully fund it every year mm-hmm. because the health savings accounts are so attractive. You can put the money in and you can use it. You get a tax deduction when you put it in and you can use it for qualified healthcare expenses and there's no taxes when you take it out. If for some reason you've built up this huge fund when you're over in retirement, you can just take it out like an IRA and pay tax on it. Mm. But it's better just to leave it in because it qualifies for so much. You can take it out for no tax consequences so long as it's for qualified medical expenses. And a lot of people are struggling now with HSA choices. And last year we had one terrible option. We only had one option and it was mm-hmm. terrible. It was very expensive. And this year we have two. Because the subsidies are built on the lowest plan in the county, now that we have competition and the plans cost less, people who qualified for a full subsidy last year may only qualify for a third of a subsidy this year. And they may not know that. And they may not know because the one that was last year is not the least expensive. And now they're giving this huge discount, but it's not as much of a discount as the new players in town. They may think that they're getting a full subsidy when they're not getting a full subsidy. They should go back and do that math again and see whether or not the other plan's not better and how much of a subsidy they're really going to get. So HSAs have been ruined by Obamacare, yeah. And what should cost young people $50 a month is now costing them about $24,000 a year, and it's just terrible. I happen to be on a grandfathered plan. I'm really glad. Mm-hmm. It's going up by 10%, and it's still ridiculously low compared to what everything else is out there on the market.
Yeah, it's just awful. And so we look at this and we say, why can't I just buy what I want to buy? Now, I understand there were some changes that were maybe administratively done by the Trump administration, which were allowing some short-term plans. It didn't have all of the associated baggage that Obamacare has with it that makes it cost more. Are there any HSA options for those? Do you even know what I'm talking about?
I'm not familiar with those. We did the math for whether you should have health care or not. And until your health care expenses for a year exceed about $11,000, you'd do better off not having any health care at all. And if you can have a qualifying event, then you can immediately go on the exchange. Normally, the exchange is only open right now during this time of the year. But if you have a qualifying event, you can go on the exchange. So all you need to do is get fired and last 1 month, and then you can go on the exchange. So there's no disincentive to not having insurance anymore because pre-existing conditions have to be covered, and you can get a qualifying event just by not showing up at work. So it's kind of a, you know, or getting a job or all kinds of different things will give you, you know, qualifying conditions. So it really isn't a great healthcare insurance environment right now. And it's been so messed up as to completely eliminate all the supply and demand that the marketplace normally has.
You know, you were talking earlier about the game of chess and paying taxes. Are you a Star Trek fan of the original series?
I am.
Because this sounds to me, this healthcare thing sounds like 3D chess.
Yes.
Okay. It's even worse than the regular chess as far as trying to understand what's going on here.
It is, because there's multiple layers that interact with each other.
We should go finally to tax loss harvesting and figure out in our remaining 4 minutes or so what we can do.
Yeah. This is the first time this past 5 weeks that we've actually had losses in the market since 2015. And so, you know, no one needed to do any tax loss harvesting. If you've bought anything in recent times and you've got losses on them, if you sell them, you can take that off on your tax. $3,000 a year can be taken off of your income tax. And if you bank all of your losses, you can take off $3,000 a year going forward for many years to come. That's always a good idea because normally gains are taxed at a lower tax rate. Losses at $3,000 a year, you can take off on your taxes against ordinary income tax rates, which is a higher rate. And playing that game back and forth. I have huge losses because I banked all my losses back in 2008 and haven't realized gains since. So I've got huge losses from 2008. I've got some small losses now that I'm going to add to that. And I tend to gift my winners to charity, so I tend to not pay any capital gains tax, but able to take the tax loss harvesting off. And that's a technique that you can use, and looking at your investment account is a good idea if you don't have someone who's managing it.
There are other things people should be doing at the end of the year, like rebalancing and all that. And people obviously have an aversion to loss. They don't want to accept that maybe they made a bad choice in an investment. But you had an interesting strategy, the would I buy it now strategy. Explain that to us.
Yeah, if you have something that has a loss and you'd still buy it now, then what we do is we recommend that you sell it, wait 31 days, and simply buy it back because now you've harvested the loss. And again, this is only in taxable accounts, not in retirement accounts. If you wouldn't buy it back, then you shouldn't have held it in the first place, and selling it sooner than later is always a good idea. We suggest that you look at everything that has expense ratios above 0.5. We just hate things that are above 0.5 expense ratio. And again, the average out there is like 0.68. So anything that has an expense ratio above 0.5, you can get a much lower cost investments for that and save a lot on your investments. And then this is the time of year when the retirement plan withholding should be adjusted coming for January 1st. The amount that you can put into a 401k or a 403b is going up from $18,500 to $19,000. If you're over 50, you can do an extra $6,000, so that would be $25,000 you can put away. And we have a technique that we call funding your Roth even when you can't afford it, and that is go ahead and put the $25,000 into your Roth at work. And if you have any taxable investments, sell them and live off of them. Because what you're doing is you're taking $25,000, maybe you have to take $25,000 out of your taxable account, and now you're putting it into your Roth where it will never get taxed. And that's just moving it from where it gets taxed to where it doesn't get taxed. Money growing in a taxable account is terrible from the tax code and will eat maybe half its value over 30 years. So if you can get it into a Roth, that's a good idea. at over age 70, required minimum distributions have to go into your taxable account. So if you have a taxable account, it will just build up. If you could just take them out the year before and do a Roth conversion, you could put it where it will never get taxed again. And from 70 to 100, the difference might be half of the value. And if you have $100,000, that half of its value will be at doubling and doubling and doubling again. It might be worth $500,000. So we recommend systematic Roth conversions, and systematic Roth conversions over time might save you tens, hundreds, or even $1 million in your after-tax net worth. And people don't know about these strategies primarily because the tax code is so complex. And compounded growth is amazing in how much difference it's going to make. And you're going to need that much because inflation is going to be huge.
It is amazing that we have to play these games, but the reality is that we do, and you better have somebody smart on your side. David Morata is online at moradaonmoney.com. Thank you so much for this timely advice.
Thank you for having me.